Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hello, friends. This is Adam Mixon, the content curator with the Ministry Collaborative. We're back again for part two of a conversation that I've been having with Charles Maxell and Laura Murray about discipleship and formation. Our conversation is kind of tracked off in some interesting directions that were way better than any questions I might ask. So I hope that you're encouraged by what follows. I want to ask you all in regards to, again, how difficult it is to do this work and how messy it is and how you have to be close. There has to be proximity and vulnerability. And that can be taxing. And that can wear on your spirit quite a bit. How do you guard yourself and where do you find your hope? What restores you when you're given to this all the time?
I just love pastoring. I may not always like people, but but I love pastoring.
Amen.
For me, it's always coming back to the reason why I do this. I'm not doing this to be on television. I'm not doing this to get rich. I'm doing this because God has a calling upon my life, and I just love pastoring, and I love God's people. And I really want, at the end of the day, my life could be summed up that he did what God told him to do. And the way I find hope is going back to that. God, what do you want me to do today? And the way I find energy is being around people like yourself and Laura and my wife and others to remind me of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, remembering your why.
That's it.
That's a good word.
I think my hope comes in almost like the bookend generations right now. Like, I get to be in a church where retired people get to speak into my life and at the same time ride in the car with my son and talk about baptism and things like that. And so for me right now, it's in the bookend generations. I'm not saying everybody in the middle is bad. I'm in the middle, but I'm just saying the bookend generations, there's just something about the ones who are close to the end and the ones that are still at the beginning. And it just kind of gives me their curiosity and their questions and their how they see things. It's just really, to me, it's fun. To me, it's fun. And to me, I think hopefulness is fun.
Yeah.
That is so good. You all are dropping so much. I just wrote down on my notepad, the hope is somewhere in between innocence and wisdom and learning, as you said earlier, to listen and to hold those stories. I had a really odd encounter yesterday morning where I was discouraged. Everybody's still in this post-pandemic where I preach to a different congregation every Sunday. You never know who might be in the room or not. And I was just kind of lamenting the unevenness of it all. And I was in my study on my knees praying just for some little sign, you know, kind of Charles, like, Lord, just show me that I'm headed the right direction, that I'm doing what you want me to do in this season. And mid prayer, and this never happens, mid prayer, somebody started banging on my door and it startled me. And when I opened the door, it was a friend who I hadn't seen in a long time. And I was just, for whatever reason, deeply encouraged by that. I was like, okay, I could go on. Sometimes it's just that little bit.
You said something really important. And I would just say to whoever's listening, just look for the small things. Is that one person that you've talked to who sends you an email a week or two later and said, hey, thank you. That's the encouragement. Someone's not going to always like your sermon, but if they're listening and not walking out, that's encouragement. You know, if you see some life is being changed or someone has invited you to be a part of the wedding or to be a part of the celebration of life of someone, that's encouragement. Because that means that you're still useful and that God still has a plan for you. And so often we want the big celebratory issue, but sometimes we got to celebrate ourselves. And one of the things I'm really learning is I need to be louder of celebrating the small accomplishments that are happening Now, they may not be meaningful to Laura, but they're meaningful to me. And they may be meaningful to Laura and not meaningful to me. We got to do that for each other and for ourselves, because so often we're looking for validation from others of what we're doing and how we're doing it, when sometimes we really just need to look in the mirror and say, you know, we did what we're supposed to do today. Amen. Yeah. Next day.
That's good. I really want to press into this, the idea of proximity and the nearness. I think that's what you called it.
Yep.
And then, Charles, you talked about pressing people toward relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is interesting, again, being professional clergy or whatever, how we say that. But then I was reminded by the incident that I just shared with you all of my need for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need the relationship. Mm-hmm. I need the nearness. It is not just a want, but it's a need for my own health and my own resiliency and my own ability to cultivate hope. What would you say again to the pastor who feels like he needs to stay at clinical distance all the time?
I mean, I was taught in ministry to have a loving distance with your congregation. And I think for the first 10 years of my ministry, I demonstrated that in some form or fashion. The challenge is, when you have loving distance, is that you still build relationships with people. And when people leave or walk away, that hurts. And there's a void. And I think if you don't call it that and acknowledge that, then you don't realize that parts of you are eroding over time. And then eventually you just have this big chasm of void. And you look up and you're like, well, okay, my ministry is not effective. And you don't celebrate the new people are coming in and the new things are happening. Yeah. And so I just think now for myself, I'm just a relationship person. And so when people come into my life, I need to acknowledge that. I need to acknowledge the fact that I need people around me to make me better, mm-hmm. to balance me out, to encourage me, just like I'm supposed to encourage other people. And there's no slight on myself to receive that encouragement or have that proximity. I think we try to do too much stuff by ourselves, and it just allows for the adversary to pick at us and whisper in our ear, and all the stuff that we preach about, we become the victims of, self-consciously or unconsciously. And so community and proximity are huge. And I always like to tell my congregation, just because I'm close to you doesn't mean I'm in community with you. And so I just want to say that too. Proximity has to have community with it to really be powerful. And we see that in relationships with husbands and wives. They stay in the same house, but they're not really together. And so I just push people. It's not just being in proximity with people. It's being in community with people, living life with them, sharing stuff, being authentic, being intentional. All of those things kind of come together. And that's hard, because pastors, we're chameleons. You know, we're one thing to the congregation, another thing at home. And at some point, we have to figure out how to be true to ourselves in both contexts, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Adam, I was going to mention from your story that one person provided stability for you. And you were saying every week different people are showing up, the context is different, but that one person who knew you over time provided stability. And that sometimes that stability can come in that one or two person relationship. It doesn't have to be the dozens of people or hundreds of people.
That's right.
So I think that's part of the proximity. And I would add to proximity is length of time as well. People have seen you go through stages of life, or you have seen them. And so that, in addition, and I love that distinction, Charles, of proximity and community, that there's been time over time, there's been proximity to that. And those things work together to add up, I think, strength. And then when you see them years later or months later, that they provide something for you that maybe nobody else could have, because you had proximity and time.
That's right.
Wow, that is so good. How did you phrase that again? Proximity doesn't mean community.
Yeah, because you can be close to someone and not be in relationship with them. And what Laura is saying is you need both to really make it powerful. I need to be close to you in proximity, but I also need to be in relationship with you over periods of time that I can be authentic, I can be transparent, I can be vulnerable. And all of those things have to happen. And you don't do that type of communication with someone the first time you meet them. it builds over time. You share issues with them, good, bad, and indifferent. And by that, then you can kind of open yourself up to folks. And I just know for myself, my first part of my ministry was trying to be the right pastor, the perfect pastor, that I would not open myself up to people. That caused problems because I was struggling with the losses and the wins that I was having each and every week. And I needed someone to have that conversation with.
So there's a phrase that I don't know if I thought of or picked up from somewhere. I don't know. So whoever thought of this, I'll give them credit. But I call it the pastoral pivot. When somebody asks you how you're doing and they really mean it, right, and then you turn it to them. And if you do that enough times over time, that'll be your default position. And you lose the ability to be able to receive a true concern or care. And then you get into this habit of pivoting and you're constantly, and then all of a sudden you find yourself like, wait a second, I'm missing. Isolated. There's gaps in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
It sneaks up on you and you don't realize, and it snuck up on me. And so when I was giving a friend who had mentored her ordination charge, which I was so privileged to give, that was part of it, is she does a great job of community. And one of my encouragements or warnings was, there's this pastoral pivot that happens the moment you get this title or put in this position, and all of a sudden you keep on turning it. And we call it in service to others, which is good to serve others, but we call it that, and then we get into that habit and we forget how to receive then how somebody is serving us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You all said some really interesting things I want to tug on. This idea of the pastoral pivot, this isolation, clinical distance, loving, what do you call it? Loving distance that you talked about. Yeah. The image came up in my mind of the woman with the issue of blood who presses up behind Jesus and reaches out and and he's being jostled about in a crowd.
Yeah.
He's surrounded by people bumping into him and he blurts out, "Who touched me?"
Right.
And you can imagine the disciples looking like, dude, we're in a crowd. There's people all around. You've been bumped from every direction. What do you mean? Who touched you? But there was something different about that touch.
Right.
The vulnerability that caused an opening that I think sometimes our desire to be the perfect leader, perfect pastor robs us of. There's something to that. And then also I hear you all saying in turn, albeit in different ways, that we can't follow Jesus alone.
No.
You may have a solitary moment where you hear the gospel, and but even that's not alone. Mm-hmm. It's impossible that we try to live out our faith independent of one another.
I mean, we see that in the example of Jesus. Anytime he had a major issue, he always took two of his disciples with him to pray. And when he had a major decision, he always went to the Father for guidance. We are so prone in these leadership positions, everyone comes to us for the answer. Sometimes that we forget prayer by itself, and I know this is going to sound really a wild example for this audience, prayer by itself is not always enough. I believe God gives us friends, mm-hmm. gives us therapists, mm-hmm. gives us counselors, mm-hmm. gives us other pastors mm-hmm. in order to get the wisdom that we need in order to do the work that God has given for our hands to do. Mm-hmm. And when we don't seek that wisdom, we really kind of shortchange ourselves mm-hmm. and put too much pressure on ourselves to be perfect, when I believe God has never asked us to be perfect. He just really asked us to be obedient. Mm-hmm.
I wish I had known how much support I would need. And I don't know that you can actually imagine how much we need. I think it's always more than we think we need.
Yeah.
I was so exhausted when I stepped away from my pastoral position. And I had worked hard. I'd been faithful. I had done all those things. And I had brought people around me, but I needed so much more support given the work that there was to do.
Yeah.
And even if somebody had told me, I wonder if I would have listened in my youth. Mm. But I wish I had known that. And also, besides needing the support along the way, I have found ministry is far more enjoyable and fun with other people. And so it's not just about surviving ministry. It's also about enjoying the work that we get to be called to. And I understand that in some ways, sometimes that joy is a privilege. But if we have people around us that we can do that with, what a gift. And so I missed out on joy and I was tired. And so when I look back now, that's what I long to guide people in and through, to be able to see who's around them and to be able to have joy as they're serving.
Wow. Y'all giving some amazing insight. I wonder if we can walk away from this conversation with an imperative almost, mm-hmm. that discipleship demands community. Yes, people are, we always kind of key on the negative. Yes, people are messy and dysfunctional and unstable and unpredictable and all those things. But it's only in community that we encounter these wonderful opportunities for collaboration and intense creativity, compassion. And I'm so grateful that you all have been here to share in these conversations. Yeah, thank you, Charles. Thank you, Laura, for your time.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.